I find it very interesting that among all the theories concerning the origin of the UFO phenomena, one that seems to draw, you know, the most fire is the conventional Judeo-Christian theory. Now, if you want to start a real war, simply suggest that UFOs may be demonic in nature, and the entire New Age sector starts screaming. But my guest tonight has studied a non-Christian religion and claims that the identities of these ufonauts are explained. Now, whatever you may believe, suffice it to say that all the theories are fair game until the fat lady sings. Until then, it is interesting to ponder the different possibilities. My guest is the editor of a well-known British saucer publication, Flying Saucer Review. This magazine has been in existence since the mid-1950s. He is also an investigator, and it is my pleasure to welcome to the program tonight Gordon Creighton. Good evening, Gordon.
Good evening to you.
Thank you for being on the program with us. I know it's very early where you are.
Great pleasure.
Well, listen, I wanted to start off by talking about your background. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you got involved in researching or investigating this this whole saucer business.
Well, I was in the British Foreign Service. I've served in your country and in South America, Brazil, and in China, and in Europe. I'm a China specialist of the equivalent to your State Department.
Uh-huh.
And I spent 10 years in China, in the British Embassy and as a British consul. And in 1941, when we had retreated right across China as the Japs advanced, we had to go with Chiang Kai-shek, of course, because we were accredited to him. And we ended up very nearly in Tibet, in a place called Chongqing,
mm-hmm.
which was where the Chinese made their last stand. And in the summer of 1941 at Chongqing, I saw a UFO. And that really was the beginning of my interest.
Wow. And what did you see?
Later on, when, a white disc flying very fast,
mm-hmm.
silently, with a flashing light on top, nothing more.
Okay.
There were other people with me who saw it.
Uh-huh.
I didn't, of course, say there goes the flying saucer because the word hadn't been termed yet, hadn't been coined.
Right.
But a few years later, I was the British government representative in New Orleans, and I spent the rest of the war there. I arrived there soon after Pearl Harbor. And when the Allied invasion of Europe started, we began to see the reports of the so-called Foo Fighters, or Krautballs, as the Americans called them.
Right.
And I immediately linked that up with what I'd seen, that mysterious thing I'd seen in China, and that was really where my files began. So my files begin in 1941.
Wow, go a long way back.
Yeah.
What prompted me to call you and get you on the program tonight was an interesting quote that I had seen of Lord Hill Norton, something that he had written, or something. I guess it was something that appeared in the London Times, the Times of London, talking about the warns of satanic UFOs, and your name was brought up in this, and.
I can't hear you.
Okay, your name was brought up in this, and I'm wondering, you know, when we talked about this on the phone the other day when we set up the interview, you were telling me your take on the UFO phenomena, what it represents, and I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
For the audience, what is your take on this?
Tell me, did you get the facts we sent you?
No, we did not get it.
Oh, I've sent you a fax.
Yeah, I did not get it.
Oh, sorry. I gave you facts all about this work that I did on the study of Islam, of the Arabic language.
Okay.
You have not got it.
I have not got it.
We sent it to you.
Did not come through.
Mm.
But anyway, go ahead and tell us about that.
Well, it's a very difficult thing to give the whole of that on a radio talk. But, of course, what I did was to suggest... It was published in Flying Saucer Review in 1988. It's been published twice, actually. And it was an account of the many years of work that I'd done on Arabic, which is one of the many languages I've studied. And those were the conclusions I'd reached, namely that a lot of the phenomenon... which we call the UFO phenomenon, is probably not extraterrestrial at all, but comes from somewhere much, much closer. Comes from right here and from other dimensions.
from other dimensions?
There are a great many researchers now are coming to that opinion. After all, Dr. Alan Hynek was a very great friend of mine right from the start. And the first person he ever met when he came to Britain the first time was me. And he was in close touch with us the whole time. And he always said that there is so far no real evidence that it's extraterrestrial. And Jacques Vallée says the same thing. I do not believe it's extraterrestrial. There might be small. Some part of it might be E.T. But after all, we've been to the moon. Humans have been to the moon. Americans have been to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little way. It's a tiny step. And I believe that at Roswell, I'm talking about the real crash of Roswell.
Right.
Not the timbim, as we call it. We have a wonderful word, timbam, because we're rather refined people. We're British. We're not like you crude American colonials. We never allow the word bullshit to pass our lips. We call it timbam. Terminal male bovine anal material.
Ooh, that's
a lot of that talked about Roswell.
Okay.
But there was a real case at Roswell, and we have written a lot about that. And, of course, I think that was real, that was material, and there were, I believe there were real bodies there.
What were these bodies, though?
I don't think they were like what was shown in that film. That film must have been something else.
Now, you're talking about the Santilli film, right?
Yeah.
I think that was Timbam myself.
That was Timbam.
Yes.
But the real Roswell affair was dealt with for many years by an excellent man in your country, that was Leonard Stringfield. And he devoted his life to it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we published the gist of his findings over a long period of time. And there's been some very good work done by other people since.
Okay. Now, excuse me, you were just saying earlier that you have studied Islam.
Yeah.
What is it that the Quran tells us about what
the... I don't get the idea that I'm an Islam fanatic.
No, I'm not.
There's a lot about them I don't like.
Okay.
So, don't get me wrong.
Gordon, let me...
My main interest is my main language is Chinese.
Okay.
And I'm more interested in Buddhism, if you're talking about religion. But anyway, I do think that in Islam, in the Quran, you'll find... And it's in the Quran you've got to look. You'll find very interesting material bearing on this subject, and that's why I emphasize it.
Gordon, when we went to break, we were talking about the Quran, and we're talking about what the Quran says about...
Yeah.
What is this?
Well, I don't want to devote the whole talk to that, because... actually, the article I wrote on it is a very long one, but I think a whole of it has been on the Internet already.
Okay.
Some time ago. But I would advise people to look carefully at what the Quran says about it, because there are some hints there. And I think if you were to talk to an officer of the Saudi Arabian Air Force, for example, these are pretty well-educated chaps, I think you'd find that they all have, if you mention this to them, they say, yes, it's, we know about that, and we think it's highly probable it's an explanation of some of the phenomenon. I'm not saying all of it.
Okay, now we're talking... Okay, but we're talking around this. What is the phenomena that they're saying that it is?
They call them jinns.
Jinns.
J-I-N-N or D-J-I-N-N.
Now, is that in the same thing as what we might know as genies?
Well, our word genie, I think, is a kind of corruption of that word, yes.
Okay.
And most people think it's just funny stuff from the Arabian Nights and all that sort of thing. But there are a lot of Muslims that take it very seriously. And it's the same thing as we deal with in psychic research. I've been a member of the British Society for Psychical Research for about 40 years, and, of course, we've got a lot of very sound scientific doctors and scientists and people like that who are members of it, and they all they realize that we're dealing with something that is of that order. You have in the States Bob Dean, who was with the forces in Europe for many years, and he's talked and lectured and written a lot about... the UFO phenomenon, and I understand that Bob Dean agrees that what we're dealing with, some of it may be physical as we know it, mm-hmm. some may not be physical as we know it. It may be other dimensional.
Well, now what's the characteristic?
Maybe one more than one. There may be all the more than one dimensional level involved. Now you had in the States immediately after World War II. You had a very interesting man in the States named Dr. Mead Lane. I think most people now have forgotten about him. But he wrote one or two very interesting books on this subject. And The Coming of the Guardians, I think, and then The Coming of the Ether Ships. And he suggested, and I think there's very good evidence for it, he was on the right track, that there may be such a thing as what he called the dense ether. And, of course, you know that for many years, people have scoffed at the old idea of the ether. But
right.
We've had one or two very important scientists in recent years in Britain. We had a British scientist named Dirac, D-I-R-A-C. It's a French name, but he himself was an Englishman up until recently. And he's been talking very seriously about the ether. We've got to go back to the idea of the ether, he thinks.
But this is where some people believe that the...
According to Mead Lane. And according to people like Dirac, there may be matter which interpenetrates our matter, which is denser than ours, not less dense, but more dense. And it's more dense so much that it's not perceptible to us.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important that one go into all these ideas, especially look at the ideas of Mead Lane.
Okay.
Mead Lane.
Okay. Let's take a call. We've got Gary calling in from our affiliate KCMO in Kansas City. Good evening, Gary.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wanting to ask him if he had checked into the United States Patent Office as far as anything being patented, specifically one patent in particular.
What's that?
3,177,654 patented April 13, 1965. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay, what is it?
Electric Aerospace Propulsion System. It is a flying UFO.
Interesting. Got a comment on that, Gordon?
Well, no, I don't know about that. I don't doubt it. I'm sure that they've been working on these things for years. Not the Americans, not the only ones.
How did you find this, Gary?
Rex Research in Gene, Nevada.
Okay.
It was all the anti-gravity patents. There's over 200 pages.
It doesn't surprise you, at least.
Okay. Gary?
Yes?
Could I get you to possibly talk to me off air about that?
Sure.
Okay. I'll put you on hold, and I'll have the producer out there take down your phone number. I'll give you a call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hold on a second here. Let me put him on hold. There he goes. Okay.
I'm in. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
There's no doubt that you've got some very interesting things flying around in the States today. And it may well be that there's a lot of alien technology in it. We've just seen a very interesting book by Colonel Corsi.
Corso? Philip Corso?
Called The Day After Roswell.
Right, right.
The Morning After Roswell or The Day After Roswell. This man who was held very high positions in your forces. He's still alive. He has now spilled the beans because he has revealed that a great deal of the latest technology was derived from either one crashed UFO or from several.
Mm-hmm.
So this book by Corsi, which has only just come out recently this year, it should be looked at very, very carefully.
I agree. We were doing that, too, as well.
Yes, very important.
Real quick before we go to our next break, what are some of the characteristics, and after we talk about this, we'll move on to another subject, but what are some of the characteristics that the djinns have that mimic or look like the aliens?
Djinn is connected with the Arabic word jana, being concealed, being hidden.
Okay.
So the idea is that these are beings that are not normally perceptible to us, but they're there and are watching us the whole time, as it were, lying doggo. And this could be another way of putting it, that they're in another dimensional setup, but right close.
Okay.
And after all, if you look at the latest findings of the top scientists in these fields in subatomic physics, that's in the States where all this leading work is going on, you have these very important new theories, like the superstring theory and so on, and they don't laugh at you any longer if you talk about a multidimensional universe.
Okay.
I understand that it's not at all stupid now to talk about the theory of a universe of 10 dimensions.
Are djinns considered to be malevolent or dangerous in any way?
The thing is, it's quite clear from the Quran that they are a whole body of beings of many species. It's really what we in the West call spirits. You have to understand that.
Okay.
We're dealing with psychic phenomena. And the Quran makes it quite clear that some of them are bad, yes, they're very bad, and some of them aren't. And Muhammad, who claimed to be bringing a new message to mankind, specifically stated that my message is for the salvation of the jinns as well as the salvation of mankind. So the thing is not left evident. But the number one baddie of the jinns is a being called Iblis, or Shaitan. And, of course, that is the Arabic word for Satan.
Very interesting.
The opponent, this is what it means.
Okay.
So it's all there.
Okay, Gordon, hold that thought.
These ideas are right there at the bottom of Christianity, of Judaism, of Islam. There are these basic ideas of the forces of the light and the forces of darkness. And it even goes back earlier than Christianity,
yeah,
because you find it in the famous religion of Zoroastrianism and Manichaeanism, which were in Iran even long before the coming of Christianity.
Very interesting.
Or Islam, long before.
Okay. My guest tonight is Gordon Creighton. He's in the United Kingdom. We're talking about UFOs over there. And, Gordon, before we go on to our next segment or discussion, let's take a call. We've got John calling in, listening in on our affiliate KNZZ in Grand Junction, but he's in Central Montana. Good evening, John.
Hello.
Hi.
How's it going? I love your program.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Where in Central Montana are you?
Near Lewistown.
Wow. Well, it's great to have you call in. What's your comment or question?
I wanted to get that patent number. It was 3 million something, but I didn't get it fast enough.
Okay.
Couldn't write it down.
All right. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We took down Gary's phone number. We're going to make contact with him. We might even do something on the show next week about it. If you want to take down my number at the end of the hour and call me, I will be happy to give you that patent number sometime during the week.
Go for it.
Okay. You'll be listening till the end of the program?
No. They don't play the last hour.
Okay.
Out of Kansas.
All right. Let me give it to you real quick. It's 303.
All right.
863. Okay. 0484.
Got it.
Okay.
That scientist Dirac, or that we pronounce Dirac in the States here, he was saying that this ether medium is at least 10 billion times denser than water. And that would mean that if you could alter this ether, it would take very little effort to fly around the world, like 1928, at the time he said it, probably 25 cents worth of energy.
Wow. Gordon, are you listening to this? Gordon?
Yes.
All right.
Dirac, very important scientist indeed, British scientist. Can we say something before we go any further?
Yes, go ahead.
I'd like to talk about elephants. I don't know whether your readers know the... The old listeners know the story of the three blind men in Iran who set out to walk to China. They were walking to Cathay. And on the way to Cathay, the three blind men encountered an elephant. And, of course, they got hold of this thing and started groping it. And one of them got hold of a great big leg, like the trunk of a tree, and he started giving a running account of what this thing was, to give a total account and description of the elephant. And the other one, another one at the other end, was got hold of his tail and was swinging on that. And the third one up at the front had got hold of the trunk, and he was giving a running account on that. Now, each of those men gave a totally incomplete and totally unsatisfying account of an elephant, because none of them had seen their elephant.
Uh-huh.
And in this UFO business, none of us have seen our elephant yet. And that's what we're dealing with.
Okay.
That's what we're dealing with.
That's very interesting. John, any other comments or questions?
I sure don't. I sure enjoy your program. It's great to hear it. And I love the bumper music for it, too.
Great. Well, thanks for calling in.
I appreciate the time. Thank you, Mike.
No problem. Keep listening.
I will.
Okay, that was John from Central Montana listening in on KNZZ in Grand Junction. The signal is getting out. Gordon, we don't have much time left. I wanted to ask you, in your years of doing this stuff that you've been doing, you've been involved in some respects, I guess, with some of the stuff that's going on in the UK. What do you think the British government knows about the UFO phenomena?
Well, it knows what the U.S. government knows.
And that is what?
Well, they know a hell of a lot.
Do they keep it? Do they keep it from the public there?
Well, of course they do. And I'm not going to criticize them for it either. I think they're very wise.
And why is that?
Because I think if the real facts, as we know them, were given out generally, you'd get massive panic. Don't forget that the governments of the world have never forgotten that Orson Welles radio program.
In 1938?
Never.
They've never forgotten that, you say?
No.
You don't think that our culture or society would be able to deal with something like that?
Not yet, no. Might never be able to.
What do you know about Admiral or Lord Hill Norton?
Oh, he's one of our most distinguished defense people.
He's a very outspoken proponent of the UFO theory, isn't he?
Yes, oh yes. He's very much like Barry Goldwater in your country.
Uh-huh.
He's very frustrated. He's held the top posts that there are, and yet he's never been let into on the facts. That's the basic thing about him that motivates him. He's very frustrated, and of course, I can understand that.
Okay. Let's take another call real quick before we go to our break. We've got Brenda calling in from our affiliate in Denver, 1280 Ralph. Good evening.
Hi, Michael. I just wanted to ask Gordon about beings that he mentioned in the Quran, the jinn. Would they correspond to angels in the Bible?
Yeah. No, quite definitely not. The jinn, the Quran is very interesting on this point. This is absolutely, it's a key thing I'm going to say. The Quran says that beneath God there are three types of beings on the earth. There is man whose body is made of soil or clay or earth. That's a very fine poetic way of saying that our bodies are made of the elements of the periodic table, which is quite true. It also states that there are the angels whose bodies are made of light. That's in Arabic, it's Nur. The angels have radiant bodies. Malach is the Arabic word for an angel. And in Hebrew, it's Malach. And they are high beings with bodies of radiant, beautiful light. And I'm perfectly sure that there are such beings. And in recent years, there have been many more accounts of them being encountered.
Okay, I've got to drop it.
Especially, for example, even by Soviet astronauts.
Okay, we've got to stop it.
Very extraordinary report.
Gordon, we don't have much time left here to wrap up the program.
With this kind of program, it's no good if you leave things hanging half said or hanging in the air unfinished.
Okay.
Now, we were talking about the position of the angels. A lot of this phenomenon is connected with that aspect. A lot of the beings that have been seen in the last 40, 50 years probably belong to that level. It's very important.
Okay.
Now, I've mentioned that the alien angelic hosts, according to that Islamic theory, and it fits in completely with the degrees of Christianity, are beings of radiant bodies of light. Now, a man has the body made of physical body, made of the elementary table. Now, what it does then say, this is common, very important, it says that the jinns are beings who, and it then gives us a term in Arabic which is almost untranslatable. They are made of what's called smokeless flame or smokeless fire. Now, I have discussed this with one doctor, an Arab, who reads my magazine, has read it for many years. He's an Arab, trained in England, and he was for many years, for some years, he was the head of the medical radiation department of the University of Baghdad under Saddam Hussein. And he told me in a letter, he said, I think you're absolutely on the right track in what you say about the jinns. He said, I do think that this is right. Now, the jinns, according to the Bible, the jinns have bodies which are made of this strange substance which is described as smokeless flame. I asked him, as a learned man and a modern doctor, what he thought this could possibly be. And his reply to me was very interesting. He said, I don't know. I suspect it's something that humans don't know about yet. I suspect it's some kind of plasma.
That's very interesting.
No, plasma is an intermediate state
between
solids and gas.
Okay, well, we're going to have to wrap it up right there because we're out of time. I want to thank you very much for being on the program and, again, being awake for us at that early hour over on your side of the coast. I want to thank you for being on the program, Gordon.
Many thanks.
Okay. That was Gordon Creighton, and, again, he is the editor of the Flying Saucer Review and very interesting guy, many years' research. That wraps it up for us tonight, and if you want to reach